Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Back in 2003, the great and legendary oral historian Studs Terkel said this, "Today we shall begin celebrating the lives of the uncelebrated." He was standing in front of a small recording booth in the middle of Grand Central Terminal in New York, and it was the beginning of a project called StoryCorps. The idea was simple. Two ordinary people sit down in a soundproof recording booth and interview each other. And every time you hear this music on NPR's Morning Edition, you know it's time to stop what you're doing and listen. Over the past 10 years, StoryCorps has collected 50,000 interviews, which are stored in the Library of Congress. StoryCorps producer Dave Isay came in recently to talk about his new book called Ties That Bind, Stories of Love and Gratitude from the First 10 Years of StoryCorps.
Anthony, it's great to be on. Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you. So, Dave, I want you to take us back to when this idea was born. You write about it beautifully in the book. 1988, when you're just about to start medical school, you stumble into the world of public radio and a story that you couldn't resist. What happened?
I was headed to medical school and had actually taken a year off because I had a feeling that it wasn't kind of my calling. I did happen upon a storefront in New York City, where I'm speaking to you from, in the East Village. And I went inside and I started talking to the people who ran the store, and it was a husband and wife. And they were both recovering heroin addicts who had been diagnosed with AIDS. This was 1987. And I got to talking to them, and they brought me into the back of their store, and they had this dream, they told me, to build a museum to addiction before they died. And of course, in 88, 87, AIDS was a death sentence, and they knew they didn't have long to live. They had written to Donald Trump and everybody else asking for funding, and of course, they were never going to get it. So I went home and started calling all the television stations in New York and, you know, said, "Will you please do a story about these people?" And everybody said, "No." And then I got to started calling the radio stations, and I got to a community radio station here in New York. And the news director said, "Sounds like a good story, but we don't have anyone to do it. Why don't you do it?" So I took a tape recorder and interviewed them. And I was so blessed at a very young age to have that moment where when I pressed record on that tape recorder, that I had a feeling this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
And what was it about holding that microphone and provoking people to tell their stories that excited you so much?
That's a good question. I mean, what the microphone did and continues to do, and this is such a kind of fundamental part of StoryCorps, that the microphone gave me the license to ask questions and have conversations and talk to people that I normally wouldn't be able to speak to or have the chance to talk to. I also saw that being interviewed was very important to those folks and continues to be important to people, and told them that someone was listening to them and their story was important and that they'd be remembered. So it's still these stories of regular people that maybe we should be spending a little more time focusing on.
I agree. And Dave Isay, speaking of that, let's listen to a clip from one of your stories. And we're going to be listening to a couple of examples of Massachusetts stories. And this interview was recorded in Rockland, Massachusetts in 2012. It's between Marilyn Gonzalez and her daughter, Jessica Pedraza. Now, Marilyn serves in the Massachusetts Army National Guard, and when she received orders in 2010 to deploy to Iraq, her daughter, Jessica, enlisted as well so she could be with her mom. And here they are talking about being in the service together. We're going to hear Marilyn's voice first.
Every time I saw you, I wanted to just go up and hug you, and I couldn't do it.
I just remember I always had to, like, sneak and kiss you on the cheek and run. "Mom, I love you."
Like that day that you said it on the radio.
I said, "Roger, I love you." And I remember somebody interrupted and they were like, "Hey, none of that over the radio." And then I heard you just say it right back.
Well, I just want to say that you were willing to put your life on the line to be there with me. I could never tell you how much that means to me.
So, Dave, that clip reminds me of what I love so much about StoryCorps. And I'm always struck by how open and frank people are with each other. We're in that booth. There's almost a confessional quality to many of these interviews. And I'm wondering what it is about the StoryCorps booth that brings that out.
I think it's people feel safe. And I think, you know, one of the things that you know and is, again, pretty obvious, but people really like to be heard and want to be heard. There's a sense when you do these interviews, folks know they're going to the Library of Congress. They know 500 years from now they're descendants will get to meet them through this voice and story. So people are open and they trust that we're going to treat their stories with respect. And it's also a tribute to the people who come to StoryCorps. You know, the facilitators will always say when they come off the road that there are a couple of things they've learned. And the two that are constant, one is that if you think you can judge someone by how they're dressed or their physical appearance, if you can, you think you can judge their internal life, who they are, what they've been through, you're always going to be wrong. And the other is that people are basically good, you know, despite the stories that we're inundated with through 24-hour news and in our news feeds on computers and stuff, that there are a lot more stories like this than you might guess.
Well, let's hear another snippet. This one was recorded in Sheffield, Massachusetts, also in 2012. And we're going to hear Will Smith talking to his teenage daughter, Olivia. And he's telling her about attending Bowdoin College when he was 27, when Olivia was an infant, and he went to college with Olivia very much in tow. And we're going to hear Olivia asking him a question about that first.
Were you ever embarrassed bringing me to class or just having me in general?
I felt a little awkward, but never embarrassed. There were times when the only way I could get through was to come in and look at you and see you sleeping and then go back to my studies. And my graduation day from Bowdoin is a day I'll never forget. You know, all of my classmates, they stood up and gave me the only standing ovation. The dean called both of our names as he presented us with the diploma.
There's something very much about our mortality that's just fundamental to StoryCorps. Hmm. When Will and Olivia had this conversation, Will had just been diagnosed with late stage cancer, and so that was kind of an undercurrent to this interview. But I do know, because we went and visited them for our 10th anniversary, that Will's cancer is in complete remission, and Olivia, who's talking to him, is now actually in the process of touring around colleges. So that's a lovely ending to that story.
David, I think StoryCorps is so good because it expresses such a pure ideal about what I think a lot of us have always tried to do with public radio, and that is it's such a simple idea, real stories and real voices. But I worry that it's an idea that we move away from too often. Do you think there are enough real voices out there in our media?
There can never be enough. You know, if you could sum up StoryCorps in one line, it would be that every life, every story matters equally. And reminding people of that and trying to help us be a somewhat more compassionate country that, you know, recognizes a value in every life and is a little better at listening. You can never have enough of this stuff. There can never be enough.
I'm curious, do you think people recognize the significance of their stories while they're actually in the booth? I mean, I'm sure many, many do. But I mean, are they, do you think they sort of come out of the booth and are like, wow, I can't believe that I was able to express that?
Yes, I do. And I think people have some trepidation before they come into the booth. A lot of people feel like they don't have a story to tell. You're going to hear the story of a guy, and this is something we hear all the time, and said, I was just doing my job. This is an interview that happened between a woman who had cancer of the bone when she was a young woman, and her doctor, who he had been operating on her since she was at the age of 12. And she said that when she was a kid, she had two dreams. One was to live and the other was to save her leg. And Dempsey, Dr. Springfield, who's at Harvard now, operated on her numerous, numerous times. Marcella never thought she was going to get married. She did get married. And this was recorded a couple of weeks after her wedding, and she had given the first dance to Dr. Springfield.
It's a beautiful clip. Let's listen to it. So we're going to hear Marcella Gaviria talking to her doctor about this fear that you mentioned, that she would never get married. Let's listen.
You know, I always wondered how difficult it would be for someone to sign up to my life. Well, I got married this year, and I wanted you to have the first dance. And that was just a way of celebrating the fact that a lot of what I'm able to do nowadays is because of your care.
It's so rewarding to see that all of that, you know, getting up before the sun comes up to get to the hospital pays off. It wasn't squandered.
Another very, very touching moment. You know, when you hear these voices, one of the things that I'm often struck by is how difficult it must be to sit down with someone close to you and ask some of these really difficult questions. You had your own StoryCorps experience with your father, with whom you had a complicated relationship at times. Do you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Sure. Right around the time I got into radio, I also found out that my dad was gay. And I was, you know, it was a big surprise. And I used the opportunity of having just started in radio to try and get to know my dad better by recording a StoryCorps interview with my dad and never listened to it. But he fell ill one day and went to the doctor. It was cancer and he was dead 9 days later.
Oh, boy.
And it was on the, you know, that he died at 7 a.m. and it was at 3 a.m. listening to that tape of my dad in that StoryCorps interview. I'm an old dad. I have 2 young kids. And knowing that this was going to be the way my kids were going to get to know this person who was so important in my life, and knowing this was the only record of his voice that existed, and the tape says so much about who he is. That's part of StoryCorps. So that was the moment that the rubber really hit the road. And if I could have, I didn't think I could believe in StoryCorps any more strongly than I did up to then. But at that moment, I did.
I just want to ask you one more question about that.
Sure.
Listening to that tape.
Yeah.
With your father right after he died. What was that like?
This is the vagaries of memory. You know, I had always, when people come to StoryCorps, one of the questions that's asked in almost every interview is, what are you proudest of? And for people who have kids, the answer is invariably my kids. And I had, my dad was very proud of his work, and rightfully so. And I said to my dad, what are you proudest of? And for the year until, you know, for all the years after that, I teased him that his answer was my books. And I said, you know, you're the one, I founded StoryCorps and you're the one person who doesn't say my kids, you know. And there I was the night he died listening to the interview for the first time. And I heard myself say, Dad, what are you proudest of? And he said, my kids. Oh. So I wish I had had the chance to apologize to him for teasing him for all those years.
Well, that's Dave Isay. He's an award-winning radio documentary producer, the founder of StoryCorps, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year with a new book, Ties That Bind, Stories of Love and Gratitude from the First 10 Years of StoryCorps. Dave Isay, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony. It was really fun. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. And we want to take a moment now to recognize the passing of the Grammy-winning jazz musician and composer Yousef Lateef, who died yesterday at his home in Shutesbury. Lateef was a master of many instruments, including flute, saxophone, oboe, and bassoon. He was one of the first musicians to incorporate world music with traditional jazz, and he shared his talents as a teacher at UMass Amherst for 15 years. This is his tune, Like It Is, from his 1968 album, The Blue Yousef Lateef. Yousef Lateef died yesterday. He was 93. And stay with us. Coming up, rock and roll great Peter Wolf joins us with songs and stories from his life in music. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.